is the news talk tonight on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. Oh, man, Paris Hilton is now a mom. Her main goal, though, is to protect her son. And you know what that means? Not from the paparazzi, just from him ever Googling Paris Hilton. Who doesn't love the James Taylor? Five nights of residency in Vegas. So brace yourself for some of the most exciting things on the Vegas Strip. And if you can't get tickets to that, you can go see James Taylor. And Regal Films in America, one of the biggest movie chains in the United States, has declared bankruptcy. The fact you can't remember the last time you went to a movie without sneaking in your own candy. That's how they make money, folks. So you look in the mirror and you try to make sense of that and blame yourself is what I say. Blame yourself. I'm Jim Richards.
News Talk Tonight is on with your host, Jim Richards, on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
We get inundated on a regular basis with demands. People saying, when are you going to get some gosh darn museum consultants on your show? What kind of show doesn't have museum consultants? There have been people picketing outside of this radio station, chanting, we want museum consultants. Can you guys reenact that right now? The chanting of we want museum consultants?
We want museum consultants.
We want museum consultants.
We want museum consultants.
We want
on a daily basis. And I've tried, I've worked hard, I've gone high and low to try to bring you that. It's our segment. There's a podcast for that. And the podcast with museum consultants, basically, because I love their podcast, The Unusual History of Everything. Of everything? Yes, everything. Well, it's a podcast, not over. They haven't got to absolutely everything, but they're going to get to it. And maybe on today's show. We're joined by Melanie Dellis and also Karen Lacey on the News Talk Tonight. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
What do museum consultants actually do?
We do everything, Jim. Pretty much anything that a museum needs. This is Melanie, by the way.
Hi, Melanie.
Hi. So we take care of artifacts. We do conservation work, preservation work. We curate the exhibits, install and deinstall the exhibits. And
yeah, we design them. We write exhibit text, kind of whatever the museum really needs. We also have private clients as well that we help out just so they can have someone to help them care for their objects and do that as well.
And that was Karen.
You do this worldwide?
Well, we're kind of focused in San Diego, but okay. We have done some work outside of California, actually. We went to Florida and did some work there, been to Wisconsin. So just kind of
wherever they need us.
Yeah, wherever they need us.
Okay, so can you guys tell us where you came up with the idea of the unusual history of everything? Basically, what I like about the podcast is sometimes I get intimidated by the length of a podcast and I'm like, okay, I can't, I don't have 2 hours right now. I don't got 90 minutes. You guys do it in good kind of 20 minutes or under for most episode with the unusual history of, it could be blank, anything. What was the reason why you guys decided to do this podcast?
Well, it actually, if you look at some of our earlier episodes, they do kind of drone on a little bit. That was before we learned how to edit. We used to do everything in kind of like one take, which meant we did it like 20 different times. But we actually, we knew each other really well. We worked in the museum together and we had worked on an exhibit together and we realized we wanted to kind of keep it going in terms of some of the research that we were talking about. And then from there, we were like, hey, maybe other people would actually want to hear what we have to say in terms of some of this unusual research. And That's kind of where it started.
Although I have to say, I have to interject here, Karen.
Oh, of course. Go ahead.
So we started about 5 years ago-ish. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to do a podcast and I wanted to do videos because I thought that was more the thing. And I'm like, who's going to listen to a podcast? Nobody's going to listen to a podcast. and so we compromised.
We compromised, but like, if you look at what we do now, like I won.
We tried to do the video route and it was just, although I think we're hilarious in the videos. Yeah, they're probably not the best quality and everything, but we do a couple here and there just to like compliment the podcast where like we taste test some of the ancient recipes or drinks and stuff and people get to see us actually physically get ill almost from some of them, things like that.
Well, who wouldn't want to see that? You can do that on the radio too. I'm guessing you could do that on the radio. I'm not sure how appealing that is. Melanie and Karen are with us. Their podcast is called The Unusual History of Everything. I think I know what the first episode was, but I don't want to say. What was the first episode?
Gnomes.
I thought it was The Unusual History of Garden Gnomes. Now, was that the only thing that you were going to do? Because wasn't there more than one episode on The Unusual History of Garden Gnomes?
Yes. So this is what happened. So our first episode, we did all this really cool research on gnomes, and we figured out that as the episodes went on and we had all these other really great topics that we wanted to put them in a book. So we started writing a nonfiction, like weird history book based on the episodes in our podcast. And when we got to the gnome chapter, we found so much more like crazy information. And we we basically redid the episode with more information and people, I don't know why, but that's our most downloaded one. Like everybody loves the gnomes.
Okay.
Which is funny because our first episodes are worse quality too.
Well, we're going to get to the unusual history of makeup, the unusual history of straws. But what of, if we want to get people interested in going back and listening to your first couple of episodes, what is the unusual history of garden gnomes? Can you do it in 2 minutes?
Yes, there is a liberation front if you find a garden gnome in distress. Garden gnomes have been used for many, many years to both enhance gardens, but also to protect gardens. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, and it started back in the 1800s. People started to realize, specifically in Germany, that these gnomes were not meant to be slaves for us. And so they set about, a group actually created themselves to free gnomes, and you can go gnoming and capture them in the dead of night, free them, and then take them around the world and send the previous slave owners of the gnomes pictures of their gnome freed and having a fun time traveling around the world.
Well, what is the original garden gnome?
Well,
it's not the old man with the beard.
Well, it is, and it's actually taken. They were created in Germany, like back in the late 1800s.
Yeah, late 1800s.
And they were kind of taken off of like a mixture of an elf and a dwarf.
Yeah.
And used as protection for the home and the garden outside, and that was the original.
The concept
of it.
And
but
then
from there, it's become, you know, kitschy and fun.
Sure.
To have all these different gnomes doing different things.
Okay, the unusual history of, we'll find out about makeup and straws and why are people putting apples in their armpit and what is the history there when we continue with this week's episode of There's a Podcast for That. We finally have the museum consultant curators with us here on the iHeartTalk Radio Network. I'm Jim Richards.
We want museum consultants. We want museum consultants.
Here we go.
This is News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
All right, coming up, we have, Leanne Brown is going to run through some common food myths with us coming up in about 20 minutes time. Things that you might believe. She is going to debunk many a food myth on the way. That in about 20 minutes time. What? Why do you have your hand up, Tony?
Jim, you're so talented. You were checking to see if I was thinking on my toes, and you said Leanne Brown instead of Leanne Phillipson. Thank you for testing me again, oh talented sir.
Oh, I made a mistake. Interesting. Okay, yes. Leanne Phillipson will be on. Who is Leanne Brown? Oh, she used to be an engineer at a station that I used to work at, actually at this radio station when it was in a different building. Nobody cares. Let's get back to the podcast of the week. We're talking about, there's a podcast for that segment, and The Unusual History Of, which started on garden gnomes. And did we learn everything that we needed to know just before the break about garden gnomes? I need to reintroduce you. We're with Melanie Dellis and also Karen Lacey. Karen, did we cover everything about garden gnomes, the unusual history of garden gnomes?
Well, you'd have to listen to our entire, like, hour-long podcast to get everything. But I think you got the gist. But I should say, we were inspired to do that episode because we both really like gnomes. But also, Melanie had just come across her grandfather's World War II gnome that was made of metal. And we were like, they're made of metal? So that was kind of where we really started with that. We always start with like an idea or an object, or something we watched or whatever. And that's really where a lot of our ideas kind of get sparked from.
Okay, well, let's do makeup then. How far back does makeup go? And what were the early history, the unusual history of everything makeup-wise?
Wow, makeup goes really far back, actually. Some of the earliest makeup that you can see, we always think about like Egypt with their, you know, really dark, cool eyes. And Melanie, what do you think the earliest would be? We see it a lot in the Egyptian makeup containers is what we've seen in museums and things like that.
The ancient cultures, I mean, they'll go back. You can go back 5,000 years or more. People were putting makeup on all the time. But see, the thing about makeup is that it didn't start out as makeup as we think of it today. It started out as a way to protect the skin from the elements and from bugs. And it just kind of morphed into beautifying the body. So back in ancient times, like thousands and thousands of years ago, they didn't have all the types of makeup we have now and the stuff we put on our bodies now to protect ourselves, like sunblock and all that. So they used what was around them. And that's really what makes, what I feel like makes our podcast fun, is that I find the really disgusting, nasty things about history. And like Karen's really good at finding the weirder parts of everything that is kind of usual that we think of today. And we kind of think of the really unusual, gross things and talk about it.
Well,
and makeup.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask what the disgusting things are.
So there are so many, but here's some fun ones. Like whale vomit is actually today still used in perfumes and colognes, but that's always fun to put to spray on our bodies. But crushed bugs, any type of crushed bug, but specifically a certain type of beetle has these dyes in it, in their bodies and their shells. And those were used and actually still are in some forms of eyeshadow and lipsticks today.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fish scales, those shimmery fish scales yeah, those are still in our nail polishes and those glittery eyeshadows that we like to wear. But all those things started just thousands of years ago. And fat, any kind of fat from an animal used to protect the skin from, the elements and stuff like that. But and eyeshadow, actually, and eyeliner, didn't that start out as a way to protect the eyes from the dust?
It was from the dust and also from the little gnats that could sometimes fly, just kind of, if you've ever been, hiking or something and you get all these little gnats around your eyes. And that's really what that cool eyeliner is really supposed to help do.
What's it supposed to do? I don't understand. So you have gnats.
It's supposed to kind of, yeah, if they're like kind of flying around, you can put this, you know, this Kohl eyeliner on, and it kind of makes them stay away, or at least kind of keeps them away from your direct, like, eye, your direct eye. It kind of keeps it like more like.
They didn't like the smell.
Yeah, they didn't like the smell. And they also just didn't really want to touch it either.
Okay, so that's the unusual history of makeup. What about straws? How far back do straws go?
Oh my God, straws are so fun.
Yeah, the earliest straw that's ever been found is about 3,000 before present. Actually, 3,000 BC. And that was from the tomb of a queen, a Sumerian queen of Ur. And her straw is really cool because it's made out of gold. It has like jewels and stuff on it. But it's unusual in the straw that we have today because it has like this little, almost like a filter at the end, because it's really supposed to be able to get past all the floating bits that used to be in many alcoholic beverages back then. Back then, they didn't really
filter
it a lot. And honestly, they didn't really give it a long time in terms of the fermentation process. So you would kind of get in underneath that layer where you'd get the really good drinks, like the earliest beer and wine and things like that.
Fun fact, though, about that beer that it was chunky and had all this chunky stuff floating at the top. That is how inadvertently they discovered penicillin.
Well, they didn't know.
But they would eat that stuff at the top at the end of drinking their beer. And it was kind of a mixture of different things that kept them all healthy. And in fact, the slaves who were getting paid in the beer to build like the pyramids, for example, they were actually found to be healthier than the slave owners.
Yeah, because they were basically getting a daily dose of this kind of
antibiotic. Penicillin. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, the straw, another last fun fact for the straw, straw actually stands for suction tube for reverse axial withdrawal.
Really?
Yeah.
And nobody back then was trying to ban those straws, correct?
No, but they started out using like paperish kind of like reed material that would disintegrate in the drinks and was very irritating.
No. Yeah, and some early ones were made of like rye grass, which would always like flavor your drinks, whether you wanted it to or not.
I can't stand the paper ones, so I'm okay with the plastic ones. Finally, guys, we've got about 2 minutes here, so I'm not sure if we can get it in, but why were people putting apples in their armpits?
Oh my God, let me tell it.
Oh, please do.
Okay.
Please do.
Okay, so
you found this fun thought.
Back, this is all about courtship, our podcast on courtship. So back in Victorian times, and there's a video where I actually do this and demonstrate, the ladies in those hot ballrooms, the men and the women would go to these balls, and it was really hot in there, and they had on all these clothes, and they would put slices of apples in their purses, and they would put them under their armpits, dance all night and get it nice and sweaty and with their scent. And when they see a man that they were interested in, they would walk up to the man, pull out the apple slice and give it to him to eat. And if he ate it, then that meant he was interested in them. And of course, if he didn't eat it, Yeah.
That is gross.
But it was just a way of courting somebody back in the 1800s.
Somebody on TikTok should try to bring that back and see how that goes over.
Well, it might be us.
Okay, because you already have the video, yeah. All right, The Unusual History of Everything, the podcast with Melanie Dellis and Karen Lacey. Guys, thank you very much for joining us on our segment. There's a podcast for that. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Straight ahead, we have a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to do cancel court today because all of these woke people keep emailing me about things that should be canceled. I'll address that coming up in about 35 minutes time. And straight ahead, food myths debunked by Leanne Phillipson, formerly Leanne Brown. That's coming up on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
This is the iHeartRadio Talk Network, and News Talk Tonight continues with Jim Richards.
This week in Canadian history is on the way in about 15 minutes' time. Then we are challenged by all of these woke liberals, if I can say it. All of them want to cancel so many things. They write me all the time, and they say, why don't you do cancel court and cancel things? You sound like an important man. Sorry, talent. So why don't you go on the radio as the talent and cancel stuff? So after in a half an hour, it's cancel court with some of the most despicable companies and or people of the week. But right now, it's the opposite of despicable. It's one of our favorite people. Formerly known as Leanne Brown. Just a half an hour ago, she was Leanne Brown on the show. And then people said, it's not Leanne Brown, it's Leanne Phillipson. Leanne Phillipson has a great podcast, which is called Eat This with Leanne. And I want you all to listen to it. Leanne Phillipson joins us right now. Leanne, thank you very much for your time.
Good evening.
Earlier, I had promoted this segment by saying Leanne Brown is going to be here. Do you know a Leanne Brown? Has anybody ever called you Leanne Brown? When people get your name wrong, what do they call you?
They call me Luann, actually.
Oh, Luann.
I've never been called, or Lillian. Everybody throws an L in there, but I've never actually had the last name Brown before. This is definitely a first.
Listen, it's not even close. Like, it's not like I called you Phillips or something. It's exactly. Nowhere in near the bot. I knew a Leanne Brown once. I just killed her. She's probably still alive. I know a Leanne Brown who is a fantastic person. This segment is you have challenged me. You've reached out through the internet and you said you wanted to talk to the talent involved on the News Talk 1010 tonight, which is me, and you're challenging me on myth or not, food myth or not. Is that what it is?
Yeah. I want to know what you know, Jim.
Okay, so these are maybe food myths or not that are either being debunked or we'll learn something here. So what is the first myth or not?
All right, myth number one, fresh fruit is healthier than frozen.
I would say that that is probably true.
Not necessarily. It really just depends on how it comes. Well, not how it comes. It's more what it is. You can't get frozen apples. I don't think you can get frozen pears.
Yeah.
So it's really about the variety. But things like frozen blueberries, whether you have them fresh or frozen, there's really no difference.
And probably a lot more convenient if you're not going to eat the whole container at one point to have them frozen and throw them in your smoothies.
A lot cheaper too.
Yep. Smoothies, pancakes, other things you could throw. Okay, so not always is the answer. What about, is that just about fruit or would you say the same about vegetables as well?
Oh, definitely the same with vegetables. Right now, prices are going up. It's not so easy to buy a broccoli or cauliflower. Just buy the stuff frozen and, warm it up. And then, hey, presto, you've got veggies on your plate.
All right. Good to know. What is the second alleged food myth or not?
Plant-based milk is way healthier than cow's milk.
I don't know. I see all these people at the coffee shop going with it, and I'd have to think they're doing it for some reason. Maybe they're vegan. I'm going to say plant-based milk is healthier.
It can be depending on the person. So you're in the right ballpark with this one. Now, cow's milk has a lot more protein, but cow's milk does not agree with everyone. It's very mucus forming. Sometimes people get belly upsets. And cow's milk was kind of made for calves. So the plant-based milk is depending on which one you get, it can have a lot of sugar in it. Oat milk spikes your glycemic index, which means that it raises your blood sugar level. So it's not the best one. You want to go for more for almond or coconut and check the ingredient lists, because you can get added sugar, added preservatives, and they're not, that's not so good either.
Is most of it just based on what you like? But if you had to use one of them that was plant-based, what would you recommend?
I've really been going for coconut lately.
Okay. Our technical director says he works when your podcast airs, so he's already known that. He already learned that from you.
Excellent.
All right. Third myth from Leanne Phillipson.
Never give a toddler peanuts.
Is the idea that if you give a toddler peanuts that the toddler is going to develop an allergy? I will say, yes, that's true. Don't give a toddler peanuts.
That is incorrect.
Darn!
Well, you wouldn't give a toddler peanuts if you know that they're allergic. However, as a preventative, this used to be a guideline, I can't even remember, 15 plus years ago, maybe even more, way before I wrote my first book in 2009. And now it is have peanuts in the home unless there's potential for it. Parents have an allergy, family has an allergy, but otherwise have it in the home. Mom, dad, eat a spoonful of peanuts, give your baby a smooch, and definitely by the time that you've got a toddler in the home, you want them to have been exposed to peanuts.
So is that like brand new thinking or relatively recently or?
No, it's actually been around for even more than 10 years.
All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have I got any of these right? I don't think I have. Myth number four is what? Alleged myth.
Alleged myth is that it's really hard for vegetarians to get enough protein.
I'm going to say that you can get protein from vegetables and maybe, we're talking about vegan or vegetarian?
I'd say vegetarian.
Okay. I'm going to say no. If you know what you're doing, you can get enough protein.
I totally agree with you. It's not so easy, and it's good to know roughly how much you need to take in a day. And for every pound of weight that you are on a scale, you want to get around that amount in grams of protein a day. So whether that's 30 grams at each meal with a total of, you know, including snacks of about 120, 130, depends on your weight. You got to know what you're doing. So you're exactly right there.
All right. I got one right, folks. And the final myth of our five food myths is
that basic nutrition advice, does it change constantly or is it all the same?
So you're saying, hey, everybody says, well, we're always hearing this recommendation that we should have, I don't know, a glass of wine, and that turned out not to be true, not be good for our heart. So basic nutrition, well, that wouldn't be basic. I'm going to say basic nutritional advice has changed pretty much through the years, no?
It has changed. I think I'm going to say that it's evolved. So, you know, kind of like the 1950s where we were like all margarine and trans fats, and things really started to go a little different after the war or wars. Then yeah, we've smartened up a lot. We've got a lot more information than we had before. And trans fats are definitely a thing of the past.
All right. How did I do? I'd say I got, I don't know, 40%. Not great.
Yeah.
I didn't. Okay. I did. Okay. Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, the discussion is what's of value here, whether you've got your score there or not.
All right. Listen to Eat This with Leanne, the podcast, where you'll learn about this stuff and tons more important stuff. Leanne Phillipson, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks, Jim.
Well, thank you. When we come back, we will meet Craig Baird from the amazing Canadian History X. That in moments, and we'll find out what happened this week in Canadian history. It's the iHeart Talk Radio Network. I'm Jim Richards.
It's News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
We got Cancel Court coming up after, in about 15 minutes time here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. I'm Jim Richards. Was that on the air, me screaming at people? Sorry, guys. But I was screaming at people. I feel bad. I'll have to admit that I wasn't screaming at people. I was asking a question and nobody was answering me. And my apologies. All right. Coming up after in about 15 minutes time, we've got Cancel Court. But right now it is time for our friend from the great podcast, Canadian History X, Craig Baird joins us. Craig, thank you very much for your time.
No, absolutely.
Your podcast is one of the most popular podcasts that deals with Canadian history. On how often do you put them out? Weekly basis?
I do, yeah. Once a week, every Tuesday, I put a podcast episode out.
Okay, so the things that you're telling us about, you're trying to tie them to kind of things that are going on in the news right now. And The Last of Us is a huge hit. It is on Crave, which I should say, full disclosure, the best streaming service around. But I didn't know that it was filmed in Canada.
It is, yeah, right nearby where I live in Edmonton and Calgary and Camor and a few other places.
Oh, pretty cool. That is great. But you thought we should focus on, and I like this idea, the first movie ever filmed in Canada?
Yeah, so it's a movie called 10 Years in Manitoba, and it was made by a guy named James Freer. He was a former news reporter, and he became a farmer, and he lived on a homestead just south of Winnipeg. So he was really intrigued by film. I mean, it was 1897, so it was the brand new thing. So he ordered film equipment from the Edison Company, and he just started kind of making short films on what he saw around him, trains on the landscape, people working on the farm, the open prairie. And one film actually shows Thomas Greenway, who is the premier of Manitoba, working on his farm. So he might actually be the first politician to ever appear on film, for all I know. But the film was very popular because it was all these shorts were put together and then exhibited in the United Kingdom in 1898. And that was sponsored by the Canadian Pacific Railway, because they saw this as a perfect way to promote tourism to possible immigrants to Manitoba. So this was a great way to show them what was in Manitoba. Unfortunately, though, the film is now lost. There's no,
oh, really?
No pictures, nothing. Yeah, unfortunately, it's long gone.
So there was only, I guess, back in the day, there would only be one copy. No, I mean, I don't know, but 1898 is a long time ago. So I'm guessing they would just have one copy and they sent it over to Europe.
Most likely, yeah. I mean, it was so early on in the film industry that it was probably the one copy that they were showing. And then somebody probably, you know, sometime in the early 1900s tossed it away, or who knows what happened to it. But now it's completely gone.
And sorry, it was shown just in London?
Throughout the United Kingdom. They really wanted to promote tourism from the United Kingdom, possibly even Ireland, but all I could find saying was the United Kingdom. So, yeah. But the Canadian Pacific Railway really saw the potential for it as a way to promote immigrants coming into Manitoba and really, you know, throughout the Canadian prairies, because there was a real push to get people to settle in there after the building of the railroad through in the 1880s.
There are people listening to us in Victoria and in Vancouver. And yesterday or the day before, there was an earthquake in California of some note, but very few people would probably know of a huge earthquake that happened in British Columbia way before Confederation, actually, and the anniversary is today.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this was a huge earthquake. It occurred today in 1700 at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And it was massive. It was about an 8.7 to 9.2 on the Richter scale. So huge. And it created this rupture of about 1,000 kilometers. And the indigenous people of the region, they have oral histories that talk about entire villages kind of just disappearing off the map. One story tells of a landslide that buried an entire village. Other villages were just flooded and swept out to sea. So this myth kind of came up of a thunderbird and a whale having a great battle, and it caused this earthquake. And one really cool aspect of it is that in Oregon and Washington, there's actually ghost forests that were created by the quake and the movement of the land. So when the tide goes out and it's low tide, there's actually tree stumps that are sticking out of the sand that these are the trees that were there when the earthquake happened before the land shifted and put them underwater. So there's really cool pictures online of these things. And it actually even caused a volcanic eruption in British Columbia. Now, the reason we know that it was at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time is because in Japan, 9 hours after the quake happened, a massive tidal wave or a massive tsunami hit Japan. And so we know from their records around the time that the earthquake would have hit in British Columbia.
It's amazing to me that that tree stumps from 223 years ago would still be visible. But I guess if they're big mothers and have deep roots, that's they're not going to go away.
Yeah, they're still standing, and it's really cool. It's you'll see, you know, a few dozen of these things just sticking out of the sand, and they've been preserved, I'm guessing, by the salt water. It's just the stumps, unfortunately. Like, it's not the huge parts of them, but they're quite large still, and so that's why they call them ghost forests, because they're essentially these remnants of what was once there.
And finally, sorry, we only have 2 minutes here. Craig Baird from Canadian History X. You can check out his podcast. George Dixon, one of Canada's greatest boxer, died on this month. He goes back to what, 1908?
Yeah, so he died on January 6, 1908, at the age of only 37. He was a great boxer. He was 5'3.5" tall. He weighed 87 pounds when he first started to box, and he was one of the best bantam and featherweight boxers in North America. He won the world bantamweight title in 1888, so he was actually the first black athlete to win a world championship in any sport, and the first Canadian-born boxing champion. Ring Magazine ranked him as the number one featherweight boxer of all time. Unfortunately, after his last boxing match in 1906, he fell into an alcohol addiction, and he was living on the streets in New York. But when his fans found out about this, they actually rallied around him to pay his medical bills. And then just a few days ago, that was the anniversary of a charity boxing match that was held to raise funds for his funeral and for a memorial of him. It was a fountain in New York that unfortunately is no longer there.
That's a pretty cool story, but a Canadian who just ended up following his travels and ended up in New York.
Yeah, he was very famous. He made a lot of money, but unfortunately, most of it was gone by the end of his life.
It sounds great. Craig, thank you very much for your time. Always interesting. Canadian History X is one of the most popular Canadian history podcasts, and you can find it wherever great podcasts are. It's everywhere, right? Is my point, Craig.
It is. Yeah, you can find it on any podcast platform.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. Coming up in about 6 minutes' time, it is time for this week's cancel court. We'll find out who is up to be canceled for good reason or bad reason. That in a matter of moments. And then coming up after in about 20 minutes' time, it's David Cooper ruins this show. And then slow news day, all still to come on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. I'm Jim Richards.